From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, March 26th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
State lawmakers on Tuesday heard mixed testimony on a bill to establish a minimum wage for farm workers. While many industry groups hailed the legislation as an important compromise, some worker advocates criticized certain labor provisions. Ari Snyder reports.
The bill, introduced by Governor Janet Mills, would require employers to pay agricultural workers no less than the state minimum wage of $14.15 an hour starting later this year. At a public hearing on Tuesday, the proposal drew support from farmers, worker advocates, and agricultural industry groups. But Andrew Schmidt with the Maine Employment Lawyers Association criticized a provision that only the State Department of Labor and not workers themselves can pursue legal action in disputes over unpaid wages.
By denying farm workers access to the courthouse, it would effectively endorse a system of second-class rights for some of our most vulnerable workers.
Farmworker advocates also criticized the bill for lacking protections relating to overtime pay and rest breaks. The legislation was crafted by a committee of agricultural interests and farmworker advocates convened by Governor Mills. The governor vetoed a previous farmworker minimum wage bill last year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Construction will soon begin on 105 new homes in six communities through the state's Rural Affordable Rental Housing Program. The Mills administration says projects will be sited in Waterville, Hollowell, Rockport, Newcastle, Rumford, and Sanford. Addressing a housing summit in Portland on Tuesday, Governor Janet Mills said Maine has more than 2,100 units in the pipeline, but more are needed.
And for the towns and people in the towns who question why there should be new projects in their neighborhoods, there is nothing to fear. We are all in this together. The whole state needs you to do your part, too.
Municipal officials say community resistance to affordable housing projects is one of the biggest challenges they face in efforts to add more units to the local housing stock. The Greater Portland Council of Governments estimates the region needs at least 24,000 new homes by the end of the decade. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments on Tuesday in a case that challenges access to a drug used in medication abortions. Anti-abortion rights groups allege that the FDA should never have approved mifepristone more than 20 years ago. Lisa Margulies, a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, says mifepristone is safe. She says roughly 70% of their patients in the state who decide to end pregnancy in its early stages choose medication abortion.
Medication abortion is extremely accessible, especially in rural areas.
Where transportation and the costs of traveling to a clinic due to lodging and childcare can be a significant barrier, says Margulies. The Supreme Court is expected to issue a decision in the case early this summer. The University of Maine Graduate Workers Union rallied on the Orono campus Tuesday, calling on the UMaine system to negotiate a fair contract. Roughly 100 people marched across campus, chanting outside the Furland Engineering Education and Design Center, where negotiations continued inside. Andrea Terrell, a research assistant studying ecology and environmental studies, says workers pushed the university system to recognize the union and now are pushing for protections in a union contract.
The changes we need will not come from the top. We will not see changes in our working and living conditions by begging the president, by begging the chancellor, or by begging our advisors, but rather when we work together and insist on change through our union is when we will see change.
A spokesperson for the university system says that administrators are optimistic that a contract can be reached in, quote, a manner that maintains meaningful graduate student work opportunities and conditions within the existing resources of our public institutions. The Maine Turnpike authorities proposed new toll road to connect Exit 45 with the Gorham Bypass on Route 114 is facing pushback from a popular dairy farm in its path. Smiling Hill Farm in Westbrook says the 4.5-mile highway would permanently alter the 300-year-old farm. Nick Song has more.
To complete its planned 4.5-mile-long route, the Maine Turnpike Authority would need to purchase 45 acres from the 550-acre farm. That might not seem too large a number, but farm co-owner Warren Knight says the road would also prevent Smiling Hill from easily accessing another 70 acres of their land.
Taking land away from a farm is like taking tables out of a restaurant, taking classrooms out of a school, removing desks from an office. It has an immediate negative effect on the overall business. To survive, a farm requires land, and when that land is lost and unable to be replaced, the farm dies.
In addition to producing and selling dairy products, Smiling Hill Farm also hosts its own cross-country skiing course and offers tours of the farm. MTA hopes to communicate further with residents by hosting community input sessions for the project. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nick Song.
And a 228-acre parcel near Acadia National Park that had been targeted as the site of a proposed glamp ground will now be permanently conserved. An Arizona company had proposed developing 12 acres of the Partridge Cove property in Lemoyne into a camping resort, but the town passed a development moratorium last year. And this week, the Frenchman Bay Conservancy announced it had reached an agreement to purchase and protect the area instead. The Conservancy's executive director, Aaron Doherty, says the deal will allow for additional recreational opportunities while protecting habitats that are, quote, critical for maintaining climate-resilient ecosystems. The group plans to meet with the town and local residents to discuss future plans for the property. The total solar eclipse that will cross a swath of western and northern Maine on April 8th could be a feast for the eyes, but physicians warn that those eyes will need protection from damaging radiation that can cause long-term vision problems. Patty White reports on the precautions that you should take before gazing up at the eclipse.
On a typical sunny day, we naturally avoid looking straight at the sun. It's just too bright. But during an eclipse, when the moon gradually obscures the sun, it's a lot more tempting to take a peek, says Edward Herrick Gleason. He's the director of the Southworth Planetarium at the University of Southern Maine.
When you have an eclipse, especially when you have a high obscuration, it won't be as painful to observe the eclipse. However, that energy will still be going into your retina. That's why you have to be very careful.
That energy beams down in the form of ultraviolet and infrared radiation that can cause damage to the retina, resulting in blurry vision and blind spots. Damage to the retina can happen within seconds, says Dr. Jesselyn Quint, the president of the Maine Optometric Association. But she says you won't necessarily know right away. Symptoms usually appear hours or even days later.
And so most people, when they think about symptoms, they're thinking about something, pain, right, or discomfort. And usually with a solar retinopathy, then that's going to be more vision. So blurry vision, oftentimes it's more of the center vision.
And vision problems can last from 3 to 6 months or even be permanent, Quint says. That's why it's important to protect your eyes. The best way to do that, she says, is to wear special eclipse glasses that block out both sun and ultraviolet light. And optometrists, astronomers, even community organizations are trying to spread the word.
But wait, before you look up, listen up.
The Southern Aroostook Development Corporation produced this PSA for local radio stations.
Regular sunglasses aren't enough. You gotta use special glasses called solar viewing glasses. They're like magic shields for your eyes. Cool!
Solar eclipse glasses have flexible lenses made of black polymer infused with carbon particles. They're at least 1,000 times darker than ordinary sunglasses and block nearly all visible light. So all you should see is the sun, or say, a bare light bulb. That also means that a camera lens, cell phone, or telescope offers no protection unless you use a special filter.
There are solar filters for telescopes. You want to make sure it's at the end of the tube. You do not want to have that filter in the eyepiece itself, because that's where the light is focused. I would never trust a filter in an eyepiece.
Edward Herrick Gleason with the USM Planetarium says there is one short period of time during an eclipse when it's safe to view the sun with the naked eye.
If you are in the totality path, you may remove the glasses only during totality, provided that you put them back on just before totality ends. You have to be very careful of that sliver of sun.
So it's critical to know the exact duration of totality in your location and to keep a watchful eye on the time. And by the way, there's an app for that.
That's why we went ahead and contracted with and partnered with the Eclipse Company.
Johanna Johnston is executive director of the Southern Aristic Development Corporation, which is organizing a multi-day eclipse festival in Houlton and offering the Eclipse Company app for free for attendees.
And it has an eclipse timer that has the vibration and sound alarms that will notify you when it's safe to take off your glasses and put them back on.
The American Astronomical Society has a list of safe suppliers on its website because there are plenty of counterfeits on the market. The website also has instructions on how to view the eclipse indirectly with a pinhole projection made from common household items. And for those with no special equipment, there will be opportunities to watch live streams at the USM Planetarium and the Temple Theater in Houlton. The University of Maine will live stream the event on YouTube. However you choose to watch it, says Edward Herrick Gleason, it will be spectacular.
If you have the ability to see a total solar eclipse, you'll never forget it.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Wednesday morning, we'll hear from some local leaders about how they're bringing new life to old towns. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.